Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, retired hospice physician, author, and educator, and I'm so glad you've joined me here today for episode number 539. In just a few moments, I'll be sharing with you a very interesting conversation I had with Leslie Howard and Richard Rosen, both of whom are yoga teachers in the Iyengar tradition. But they're also co-authors of a new book called Shavasana, Between Breath and Death, A How-To for the Final Pose. For those of you who don't know yoga, Shavasana is the final resting pose that often takes place after a yoga class or workout, and it's also known as the corpse pose. So we talk a bit about Shavasana itself and the tradition and how it started, but why Shavasana is a good rehearsal for death. And Leslie shares that she herself has become a death doula now, and they are actually leading death cafes in their yoga studio, which I love. And I think that's a really interesting option, and I would love to see death cafes everywhere. So stay tuned. I think you'll enjoy our conversation. Even if you're not a yoga practitioner or familiar with yoga, just take a listen, and I think you'll enjoy what Leslie and Richard have to say. Today, I'm reminding everyone that my latest book, Wild and Holy, A Journey Through Grief, Guilt, and Grace in Italy, is available, fully published out there, and anyone who wants it can buy it anywhere. You can go to bookstores and ask them to order it for you. It's also available online at bookshop.org or Amazon, and I hope you'll take a look at it. It's the story of a pilgrimage through Italy that it ended up becoming a grief pilgrimage, and so much beauty and insight and grief and pain and joy on this trip through Italy. And you may enjoy reading this memoir, a travel memoir, really, of mine, Wild and Holy. Also, I want to mention that my latest post on Soul Code is on becoming an elder in the age of technology. And my latest podcast on What Really Matters, one of them, is on practices for preparing for elderhood. And there's another one on keeping vigil while the world is at war. I think you might enjoy both of those, so I hope you'll go take a listen on What Really Matters or read the blog on Substack, and there are links to both of those in the show notes for this episode. I'd like to thank my latest supporter on my Patreon page, Karen Sheldahl. Thank you so much for stepping up and making a contribution to help keep this podcast and the YouTube channel on the air. Thanks also to everyone, all of the supporters over the years who've been making donations either on the Patreon page at patreon.com/EOLU or by buying me a coffee or donating through PayPal. I appreciate your contributions so much. It means everything to me. And it truly does help me keep going emotionally and spiritually just to know that you're out there and you appreciate what I do. So thanks from the bottom of my heart for your support in every way. We'll move on now with my conversation with Leslie Howard and Richard Rosen, and I'll come back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm very excited to welcome two special guests. Leslie Howard is an Oakland-based yoga teacher known for her groundbreaking work in pelvic floor health and leads workshops and teacher trainings worldwide. After the death of a longtime student from uterine cancer, Leslie began a deep exploration of mortality. She has since completed 60 hours of death doula training, facilitates a regular death cafe, and volunteers with hospice through Kaiser Oakland. And my second guest is Richard Rosen, who began his practice of yoga back in 1980, trained at the BKS Iyengar Yoga Institute in San Francisco, and operated the Piedmont Yoga Studio in Oakland, California, with Rodney Yee, who is the the first person I learned yoga from on video. Richard has written numerous articles and reviews for national yoga magazines and is also the author of 5 books, but now a 6th one is being added to the list. Richard lives in a 115-year-old bungalow in beautiful Berkeley, California. And together, Leslie and Richard are the authors of a brand new book, Shavasana. I hope I pronounced that right. Shavasana, Between Breath and Death, a How-To for the Final Pose. And you can learn more at Leslie's website, lesliehowardyoga.com, or at the website betweenbreathanddeath.com. So Leslie and Richard, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Yes.
Well, I'm just really honored to get to talk to you because as I was mentioning before, yoga has been a practice that I've used my whole life, really, since I was pretty young. And so I'm a big proponent of it and excited to get to talk about yoga as a practice for learning about the end of life, really, for learning about our mortality. And Richard, I thought maybe I'd start with you and ask you for listeners who aren't familiar with yoga to just explain what is Shavasana. And am I saying it correctly?
You are saying it correctly. Shavasana is a Sanskrit word, which consists of two smaller words. Shava, which means corpse, and that's just about it. That doesn't mean anything else. And asana, which is usually translated nowadays as pose or posture, but literally it means seat. The original asana was the platform on which the yogi practiced, but over time, the posture in which he sat on the platform became included in the definition of asana. So Shavasana is literally the seat of death.
Mm. So death is actually in the name itself. Yeah. And then Shavasana, at least in my experience, it's like the last part of a yoga practice at the end of a session. Is that correct?
Customarily, although there are some practices that intersperse Shavasanas between the poses as rest periods. They're unusual, though. It usually comes toward the end.
Well, I'm interested. Always, Shavasana was the thing I looked forward to the whole yoga practice, you know, because it is this time of just lying in stillness and quiet, and there's so much peace. And after doing all this work with the physical body, it's so grounding and integrating to just lie still on the mat. Sometimes I've had music being played, other times just total quiet. I guess there are lots of different ways to utilize, but in yoga, I'm just curious about what is the intent behind Shavasana. For me, it's a great time to rest and meditate a little bit, but if you could tell us a little more officially.
Well, Leslie, you can jump in here too if you want to. Shavasana started out as a rest posture. I mean, that was essentially it, and it's quite old. The roots of Shavasana go back maybe 700 years. At that time, it was called an esoteric technique. But the first time it was designated as an asana was in a book called the Hatha Pradipika, or Light on Yoga, which is the first text dedicated strictly to Hatha Yoga. And in that book too, it was a rest pose. So that's been the main thrust of asana, of Shavasana, for a very long time. Although nowadays we use Shavasana for various other ends, for example, stress relief. Help me, Leslie.
Nervous system regulation, can really help with calming anxiety. And I want to just comment on what Richard said is it was known as a rest, but we don't really have a lot written about it. Like historically, there's not very much written about it. And so what we do know about a lot of the naming of the yoga poses is there might be something more behind it than than first look.
Shavasana is not a well-received pose nowadays. Most people, I shouldn't say this, but there's a lot of schools of yoga today that don't really have much use for Shavasana in their daily practice. So I think one of the things that we hope to do is spread the word a little bit more that Shavasana can be a useful practice, not only at the end of a yoga session, but also during daily life for a variety of reasons.
That's really interesting because I was going to mention that very thing. When I've taken yoga classes in some facilities, I find that certain people don't stay for Shavasana. As soon as we're done with all the other poses, they roll up their mat and leave, which always amazed me because my favorite thing was to do Shavasana. And I was just surprised that people didn't
Yeah,
want
I see
that,
it as
just
a
that
waste of
time.
time. I think there's a waste of time aspect to it, as well as a difficulty of sitting with one's self, which I might say is the bigger issue, right? I would suspect.
Yeah, it's there's a way to, end the class with yourself, in yourself, and sort of integrate what you've taken in during the class, and sort of live with it for a while and really feel what the effect of the class has been. And it's unfortunate that people do that. They don't really, they don't, people, a lot of teachers don't approach Shavasana as a pose, as an asana, which it is. And they just, people have the impression that you're just lying on the floor for a few minutes, snoring.
With no instruction.
With no
And
instruction, exactly.
yeah. And so that was one of the driving forces for this book, is Richard and I talking about this. And we both have, we share our teacher, Ramanand Patel, who like is the best person ever giving Shavasana. And we've both had like really profound experiences through that. And I thought it was a really lost opportunity for a lot of teachers. And I think a lot of teachers don't even know, like Richard said, that it's actually something that can be taught.
People lie down for Shavasana, or what they think is Shavasana, and they have a hard time, and they think of it, as Leslie said, as a waste of time, and so they just leave. But if you go to a yoga class, your first yoga classes, and you probably remember this, that you early on you can't do anything. It's, any of the poses don't feel none of the poses feel very good. So you have to treat Shavasana just like you might treat triangle pose or headstand or anything like that. It's a pose, and you have to learn how to do it. And there's a very specific process you go through to get a handle on that pose.
Well, I think it's interesting because we're living in an era right now where I don't think anyone has enough stillness or quiet time in their day. Everyone is so busy and so rushed and hectic, and yet the beauty of just a few moments of being quiet and still, and as you said, Leslie, going within yourself to see yourself and look within, it can be so powerful, but it's something that's missing for most of us. And we would all benefit, as you said, Richard, even from just moments of Shavasana throughout our day when we could stop and be still and rest.
It really supports doing. And that, Shavasana is the opposite of that. The more you try to do it, the less good it is. Unlike the other poses where you'd have to like put your will towards it. But really, Shavasana is an allowing pose.
Well, we need these contrasts really in life. We get the most out of one aspect when we have something to, as you said, Richard, to balance it, to keep it all in perspective. And so, but I'm interested. So Shavasana literally means corpse pose. And so there, so death is kind of built into the word itself, of lying as still as if you were a corpse, I guess, is what that means. Yeah, and so that's interesting too, because it implies the idea of actually practicing dying. And so is that the intent for yogis who practice it, of like incorporating the idea of mortality into the yoga practice?
I think we could both answer that differently, but yes, I feel like it's so interesting to me when I've been Richard and I do this as a workshop, and I think like yoga studios would be wanting to do this, and some of them are like, oh no, my students don't really want to think about their death, they're, and to me, like the whole idea of yoga, the whole philosophy of yoga is to realize that you're not this flesh, you're not this these thoughts. And it, to me, it seems like the most like apparent thing you should be doing. Richard and I obviously have talked a lot about this, but it could be interpreted as the death of the ego. It could be the idea of non-attachment, of letting go of our attachments, because in some of the philosophy, it talks about our attachments are what holds us back. Right. So yeah, it is kind of a practice run.
I'd like to qualify that. It's not the death of the ego. So that's kind of like,
Well, yeah, go ahead.
it's a replacement. It's the repositioning of the ego in the economy of the consciousness, where it properly belongs. But it's no, there's no sense of it being killing off your ego. I mean, you wouldn't get through the day very easily without one.
Without,
Putting
yeah.
Shavasana, how about That's good. I'll go with it. I wanted to mention there's another word there's another name for Shavasana in some of the old texts. It's Mrittasana. And you know what Mritta means? Mritta? It means death. So there's actually two names for the pose, but
Two
the
names that
one point.
both imply death. Okay, so we're not killing off the ego,
No,
but
no, no.
we're putting the ego in its proper place, giving it its appropriate role to carry out instead of believing that it's in charge of everything. And
That's right.
yes.
Exactly.
Well, I wanted to talk about one thing that I read in looking at some information about the book is that Shavasana is a type of conscious rest, which I really like that idea as well. It's resting the body, but consciously, like an intentional form of rest, and not just vegging out in a way, if we say that. It's like there's a consciousness and intent to it. So I don't know if that's something you could talk a little bit more about.
Richard.
You mentioned earlier that lying still the appearance of lying still from the outside is a appearance of a corpse, but inside there's where the life of the pose is right there, and we both of us realize that the one of the difficulties, I mean, you can be physically still, but if you're still thinking about stuff inside, you're not really still yet. The yogis say if you're thinking, you're still doing something. And so the real issue behind a Shavasana is getting the mind to quiet down, and that's harder to do for most people than getting your body to be quiet. Yeah, but with the body, you have something physical to work with. But with your head, I mean, there's nothing really there. So I mean, one of the things we've covered in the book is that it's sort of how to start getting your brain to quiet down so you can get that feeling of true rest.
Which is through breath observation. We did a piece on mantra. We did a piece on using mudras. It's just like things to help you to quiet yourself down. Because, like a lot of the yoga philosophy talks about if you can quiet yourself down, you will experience your true nature, who you really are.
The first thing we write about in the book is the witness, which is the part of yourself that stands back from yourself and just watches. And that, I mean, that's really the first step, but it's not an easy step to take because you're so used to being caught up in your thoughts that you try to step back and you can do it for like 5 seconds or whatever. Then you get pulled back in again. So you have to really be very persistent to establish that sense of separation and
And then
objectivity.
the witness is kind of a non-judgmental part of the self too, that's able to just see, just observe what's
You
happening.
studied yoga. Really, that's
Yeah,
pretty good.
just my own work with, working on consciousness, and that the witness also being in that state of witnessing, that's also when we're open to maybe hearing our intuition or some sort of higher guidance. So it's a really valuable practice to learn how to get into that state.
I feel like the physical yoga practice we do, like I tell my students all the time, yoga is an energy management system, right? And it's like when we're making these shapes with our bodies, we're moving the energy in different places in our body by shaping, right? And then from the shape, then the movement of your breath is different in every single pose. And can you observe that? And so it's this kind of layering or peeling rather back, like from the physical to the breath to a more meditative place. So, it's a whole system. But I think Richard and I are in agreement that like the end of the class, which is really kind of the culmination of you should just like now be, like you said, people roll up their mat and leave, or their eyes are wide open, they can't relax.
Yeah, it's a symbolic ending, and when you get up, it's sort of like a rebirth. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I love that idea. Well, I'm hoping that we just our conversation will convince some people to give it a try, because I imagine some people have never stayed for it. They find out, oh, this might be optional. This is the end piece. I'm not gonna try it, or they tried it one time. But it seems like it's something that you need to keep practicing at in order to really get the benefits from it.
And also, I think it is valid to be silent as a teacher that's doing Shavasana, but not all the time. You know, like it depends on who you're teaching. So, like with beginners, I think it's really important to be talking through much of it, giving, you know, a portion of it silence, but to try to get them to this distilled place, you know, that we're working on their subtle awareness.
One of the problems with the pose is that people hear the word death and they immediately, they get turned off by it. So, a lot of teachers, I used to watch Lilius on PBS, and she called it the sponge pose. A lot of teachers call it relaxation, or they avoid the idea of death because it's a different kind of death than we Westerners are accustomed to.
Yeah, the network didn't want to call it corpse pose with Lilas. But I
And
love,
then him.
actually, I do love a sponge, because if you think about a sponge, it's taking something in and then it's expanding out.
Oh,
So,
that, yeah, that's good
right?
imagery.
And
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of works.
Well, as someone with a podcast named End of Life University, I know what you're talking about, that it's just not popular to talk about these subjects, and yet it's what we
Popular.
need. It's what we need so desperately in our society, to just be able to talk about it. And Leslie, you went on to get training as a death doula. So tell me about that, about what led you to that.
Well, as you said in the intro, a longtime student was diagnosed with stage 4 uterine cancer, and she was given like 2 or 3 months to live. And I thought, oh my God, how can I best serve her? And I thought, I'm going to sign up for this training that was like, you know, intensive 4-day thing. And she actually got COVID in the hospital and died before I even finished the training. But, you know, I do credit her for giving me the beginnings of wanting to do more in this part of life. And yeah, so then I went on to, I thought I would like to try hospice volunteering. And then I went to a couple death cafes, and I was like, Richard, I called up Richard. I'm like, Richard, you need to go to the death cafe with me. He's like, doesn't sound like a fun night, but okay, I'll go. So off we went. And afterwards, I remember we had these really profoundly deep conversations, and like we really, I mean, it was great.
Talking about death
So
leads to that kind of stuff.
what's that?
Talking about death leads to that kind of conversation. We see
Yeah.
that death cafe all the time. These total strangers come in, and they just start revealing things about their lives they probably wouldn't do in any other kind of company.
Yeah, and I thought it would be a great addition to have at our yoga studio and for our community, and they've been very well received. So, and I'm sure
Yeah.
your listeners know what a death cafe is. I'm just saying.
Yes, I was going to say, I think most of the listeners do, because I've done interviews about Death Cafe, which we can briefly mention. It's kind of a meeting where strangers come together and talk about death with, there's not a real agenda. It's not like a facilitator or a workshop or anything else. It's really a casual, informal time for people to come together. And it's amazing. Everyone I've ever attended has been so different, because the conversation depends on who shows up and what need they have, what they need to talk about.
Yeah.
One thing that happens all the time is that somebody comes in and is very shy right at first about participating. And then as time goes on, and other people start talking about their experience, this person who was shy at first opens up and just starts talking about, who knows what, but that's m much more personal stuff.
Also, the
Yeah.
presence of younger people has been, I think, Richard and I, you know, obviously it skews to the older for obvious reasons. But you know, there's always some young people there, and often they've lost a friend through a car accident or, you know, something, and they're just trying to make sense of it all, which is, it's really lovely to have them there.
And it's creating a space, a safe space, where people can come and talk about it. And the very fact of how many people attend death cafes whenever they're held tells us there's a need for it, that people maybe are not finding safe spaces anywhere else where they can they can really talk about their feelings and all the things that they're going through after a death.
Yeah, agreed.
So I was interested that you've brought it into the yoga studio, the idea of a death cafe into yoga, and I think that's amazing. Death after yoga or something. I think that's really wonderful, and it seems like a good fit to me. But then, of course, I'm someone who loves Shavasana,
Right.
so how
Well,
has it
I
done?
think overall it's been, people like Richard mentioned were shy for, I think his students were like, what is this thing? But he encouraged them to come, and they, we have a lot of repeat people.
It's not only yoga students that come to these things, but just a general public. People hear about this event and they come to just they're curious. They come to see what's going on.
Yeah, it's so powerful and so needed in our society. And I love the idea of integrating the death cafe and talking about death really into everything that we do in every arena of life. So that's why it intrigued me to be combining it, bringing it into a yoga studio and combining it there, because that's really how it should be in a way. We should be able to talk about death everywhere.
Agreed, and I think it really helps life be richer for it. So I think a lot of us go around not wanting to talk about it, avoiding it at all costs. I mean, I can't tell you how many friends, I'm 62 and I have a lot of friends who are dealing with aging parents, and the parents don't want to talk about it. Like they're very close to the end, and they're like, well, I'm not, why do you want to even talk about this stuff now? So there's a fair amount of that going on, and it's unfortunate.
And it seems to me that yoga is a tool, at least I've found it personally, that can actually be really helpful to us as we're going through some of these challenging times when we're dealing with grief or loss. And I'm wondering if you could, either one of you could share a little bit about that. Maybe Leslie, you could start.
Gosh, that's a vast subject. I could say, if you're grieving, often in the tradition that Richard and I came through the Iyengar system, you would probably put people in a more backbending practice to, because if you can think about the sense of grief, it feels like, your heart is literally heavy, right? And so the idea is, can you open it and stay with that? And we've both had experiences of students being very emotional in certain poses. So there's that. There's also another reason we put the mantra breathing mudra portion in the book is, now having worked in hospice for a few years, people, they get diminished, right? Their energy is diminished. And so usually at the end, basically, they can barely get out of bed if they can't, if they can get out of bed at all. So they can't do very much, but they can work on their breath. Like just helping somebody breathe a little bit easier. Mantra. Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, breath is. I mean, breath is for me. Breath is the is the is the key to quieting yourself down in many different ways. And it's unfortunate that along with not doing Shavasana, people don't do their breathing practice either in the yoga class. It's that's another thing that I don't want to get off subject, but that's another thing, another aspect of the practice that nobody's really very interested much today, and that is pranayama. And I think it's an essential part of the practice.
That sounds like something that hospice workers or death doulas might benefit from knowing about, using breathing practices, not only for the patients that they're caring for, but even for family members, who might be feeling a lot of anxiety or tension in the room. If they could just introduce some simple breathing techniques, it seems like that would make a difference.
Has to be done properly, though. If you're breathing with anxiety, you could make it worse. Not to scare anybody away, but there has to be a certain measured development of the practice. You just can't. I see a lot of people that pop right into doing their nose and stuff like that. It just doesn't. It's not useful to do that. You have to build a foundation first, and then move on from there.
I'm gonna say I totally agree with everything Richard says, and like dialing it back even more, like you know, I you in the introduction told people that one of my specialties is the pelvic floor. And what I see a lot of people who have pelvic floor issues are not breathing properly. And I could, that's just a very small population, but like a lot of my yoga students aren't even just regular breathing properly. A lot of people have this anxious breath pattern where they're pulling their belly in and up as they're inhaling, which is the opposite of optimal, just regular breathing. So yes, Richard, what Richard's saying is true. Like no one is interested, not no one, many people are not interested in pranayama. And it's a practice like yoga, but and it's something you have to use care and guidance with. But just getting people to understand that they're not even breathing regularly very well is important.
Yeah, I have the luxury of having classes for an hour and a half. A lot of classes nowadays are an hour long, which is another reason why Shavasana is skipped over frequently. Because, in a flow class, for example, which we don't do, but people want to move, and in just an hour, they don't want to spend
A minute.
a portion of it lying on the floor doing nothing. So a lot of times, Shavasana is out.
Or it's 3 minutes or 5 minutes, but Western science tells us it takes 8 minutes, at least 8 minutes, for the nervous system to kick into parasympathetic.
Yeah, I was gonna say that I have the luxury of having 90-minute classes because I'm an old guy, and
And stubborn.
I can do 10 to 12 minutes of Shavasana at the end of my class every time.
Do you have to convince some people to stay? Is that, do you teach in advance, like, please stay for the Shavasana because
Nobody
here's
like that.
why?
Me neither, but I always teach Shavasana. I talk them through it, and I people like my Shavasanas.
My Shavasana is always preceded by 15 minutes of breathing. So they're sort of hooked, they're sort of roped in by then. They can't really walk out.
The ends justify the
Yeah.
Captive audience.
Well, I know that there are specific practices like in Buddhism for just contemplating death. I don't think I've ever had a yoga teacher mention that idea, but does that ever happen in yoga that that's actually the
I asked her
suggestion?
this when we were writing the book. You tell her what the practices are for the yogis. Going to the charnel. Isn't that what you told me? That the yogis are instructed to go to the cremation place
Oh,
and
that's a different kind of practice, but yeah,
yeah,
that's
but
a tantric practice where they go. The original, well, one of the forms of Shavasana is to actually sit on a dead body.
Wow.
So they go to the cremation, they go to the burial grounds, and they get a body. I don't know how they do it, but that's a Shavasana. That's a death seat, literally, and they contemplate their own mortality. I don't know much about that, but I mean, I know that's one thing that these guys do, but I'm not sure it's a common practice.
And there's a lot of crossover between yoga philosophy and Buddhism. I mean, there's a, you
A
know,
lot of
and
exchange in the early days between that and the Yoga Sutra.
yeah.
Yeah, so very interesting. I was curious to know, many years ago when I was first starting in hospice, I attended a workshop on yoga for patients at the end of life, and it was actually about restorative poses and how to use pillows as props to help people be more comfortable who were lying in bed. And that was one of the most helpful things I ever learned because it seems simple. It seems obvious. Well, of course, use pillows to keep people more comfortable, but it was the careful positioning of the pillows. It made such a difference. And I've always wished there would be more classes like that to train people, home health aides, and just family members who are caring for someone who spends long hours in bed, how to think about the body and what the body needs to be supported and to stay comfortable.
But thank you for bringing that up, though, because when I go to visit my current hospice patient, some well-intended person has put so many pillows behind her in the bed that I'm always like, oh my God, I feel like as my yoga, as a yoga teacher, I'm like, that is just so bad for her breathing and stuff. So I'm always going in and rearranging her pillows. That I hadn't thought of that. That's You're right. It should be some regular classes on that.
Because it's a simple thing, but it can make a big difference for comfort of the body. And I remember, well, we practiced being the patient and had someone position us like on your side with pillows, but the way the pillows were put under the arms and between the legs, and just it made all the difference in being comfortable. And that has stuck with me ever since then. And I've always noticed that and thought about that. Like, this person need we need more pillows in this bed. We need
Did
more
they do it? Did
props.
they do it like at a place where you had a hospital bed so that you could actually?
We were doing it on yoga mats, actually, in a studio. So we were lying on the floor, but it was instructive anyway to just to see how well you could support someone and really take help their body, I don't know, take some of the weight off of the parts of the body that are touching the bed so that they were less likely to get bed sores and could stay more comfortable. But
And also
I don't
just
know.
being able to change the
We cover
position.
all that in the book, by the way, right? There's a lot of pictures of Leslie lying in different positions.
Yeah, we have a lot of Shavasana
And not only
different versions of Shavasana.
how to do it, but how not to do it. We she has pictures of how not to lie down, and we have pictures of using props, bolsters, handbags. Heavy weight on the body is really help. It really helps relaxation.
And I guess one thing I want, if there are people listening who are not familiar with yoga or have some fears or discomfort with the idea of yoga, I just wanted to emphasize I started it myself as a total novice. I knew nothing. And I've learned enough to be able to find it an enjoyable practice. And I really want to encourage people to try it who may not be familiar with yoga. So I don't know if you want to put in a plug for trying yoga as well.
But you need to do some research before you go. Make sure you get in the right class. Because if you get in the wrong class, it's very discouraging and it just kills your incentive to do more. So
Yeah,
you have
there's lots of different
to call the
styles.
school ahead of time and get a sense of what's the proper class, who what kind of practice do you want to do, who do you want to practice with, and get some idea of what you're getting into before you go.
That's a good idea. So maybe that is, some people have been discouraged because they were maybe in a class that was too advanced, or it just wasn't exactly the right style of yoga for
Popular
their.
style right now is the vinyasa, the flow, and so that obviously for obvious reasons that's skewing to the younger crowd. And so if you're coming to yoga, after 50, let's say, you might not be able to keep up with that, or you might hurt yourself. Whereas the style that Richard and I have studied under, the Iyengar method, is really careful about all that. I mean, we're looking to make sure their alignment is right, that no one's going to get hurt, lots of props if needed.
Adaptable. I mean, we teach several classes at once. Oftentimes, there's some people can do more, some people can do less, and we adjust the position so they can get the most out of the position that they get the most out of the position they can.
I want to go back to your question about hospice workers and like how we can support them. I just want
Yes.
to say that having done this now for a while and sat with some people as they passed, I don't think I could have done that without my yoga training. Not to say you need that to do it, but for me, I really have given this a lot of thought. That yoga has made me able to be present with discomfort. And, just sitting with somebody, holding their hand and being present to that is just like such a gift. And I feel like yoga really supports that. So I think it could be a hugely supportive practice for someone working in the deaf community.
That's such a good point. Because of that, practicing stillness and being able to sit with yourself and be with yourself, you need to be able to do that in order to be with someone else, especially someone who's suffering.
Yeah, or like someone I have right now who she English is not her first language, and so she's been reverting to her native language a lot, which I don't speak. And I just, I go with it, but I hold her hand, which she likes, she wants that. And I'm just present with her. So it's a really beautiful thing.
Oh, I really love that. And so, that in itself is kind of a yoga practice, sitting at the bedside and holding someone's hand.
Yeah.
I love that idea. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that's in the book? I'm curious about.
You talked a little bit about the history. The book goes through the history and why do we do it, and then how to do it, and the different
Yeah, and
parts.
not only how to do it, but how to get into it and get out of it. That's also, I mean, a lot of modern contemporary students think of asana or posture as a thing that they do, but they don't think of getting, they don't, it's, they think of it as a state rather than a process. There's a way to get in, there's a way to stay in, then there's a way to get out. And this is especially true of Shavasana. So we have a whole section in there about how to lie down in Shavasana properly and how to get out when you're done. And this is based on the work of B.K.S. Iyengar.
That's
The
what that's interesting.
interesting thing about that is that his book called Light on Pranayama, the longest chapter in that book is on Shavasana. And so I think that underscores the importance of that practice in and of itself, but also as a foundation for pranayama, for more breathing.
And even the idea that it's a process itself, I think that's a really powerful lesson for us about life because that's what most of life is. It's a process that we're going through. We're learning and growing as we go. And back to Rodney Heath, one thing that I remember that I heard early on a video, that I mean, obviously I still quote it today, but is that we practice balance poses, not just so that we can stand in balance for a long time. We practice balance poses so we can learn how to get back into balance when we've fallen out of balance. That comes up to me day after day in my life when I make mistakes and I forget things and I, oh yeah, darn, I was always going to do it this way and I forgot again. And it's like I practice so I can just get back in balance now. That's why I do the practice so I can get back where I need to be, not so that I never make a mistake or never fall out of balance. So that alone, that teaching alone has been really powerful for me.
He's a very balanced person, by the way.
And then, just kind of going in my head, I'm going through the book. And then the last section, so it's really three sections. And then the last section, it all deals a lot around death and, practices to support a dying person or yourself if you are helping a dying person. What is death? And again, from our yoga perspective, the Bhagavad Gita, which is, kind of the main text, one of the main texts of yoga, it says we were never born and we never died, like that, to remember that. That's fear is that fear, there's no fear, there should be no fear of death. That it's just a casting off.
So, yeah, casting off of the physical existence.
No coat.
Yeah. I mean, not to make light of death either, but there's the relative, like a pain of losing somebody or the pain of dying. That's real. And then there's the absolute, right? If you look at it, like if you like go out, if you zoom out, like the bigger perspective, from the yoga philosophy perspective, it's like we're just gonna keep doing this until you get it right. You get to come back again. I mean, I joke with my students all the time, like my next life, I'm gonna make sure I do this. So there is, some I kind of like the reincarnation model because it's like, okay, I don't have to completely get it right this time because I'm going to get another chance.
That was my job
Exactly.
at the death cafes. They were talking about death being the final thing, and I'd always bring up, well, there's other ways of looking at the end of life. It could be a new beginning for another life.
Yeah, that's yeah, so true. Well, it sounds to me like the book itself, it's not just for seasoned yogis, that it could be for people who are new to yoga and maybe also new to thinking about death and dying at the same time.
It's not a book that you necessarily have to sit down and read from beginning to end. It's also the way we put it together is you could open it up to what you want. Like if you're a new person, you could just be like, I'm interested in the Shavasana. You could go to the middle of the book where all the how-to is and the photographs and all that. If you're interested in the death world, you might want to just read the third section and see what our perspective is on death and
Very
dying.
basic, very basic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it to me, it's just such a helpful tool to have on hand because I think, and you may have experienced this as a death doula, Leslie, that the more tools we have, the better we're able to serve a variety of different people who have the different needs, and the more we work on ourselves as well, and also expand our own consciousness, the more
Totally.
we can be there for other people, as you were saying, be present for them and be with them in
That's the
their,
most present. And then if you can be in your breath and be, if your breath is long and grounded and optimal, that is one of the best tools to make the person whose hand you're holding to also breathe better. So
And so will readers find the like instructions for doing for breathing practices and mudras in the book, so they can really use this as a guide. But as you were saying, maybe they also need to look into some classes if they really want to get into utilizing yoga and make sure they have the right class.
definitely. And you can go to my website or our home studio, Nest Yoga. They do a lot of streaming where you could study with Richard or myself. The other thing I was going to say is one of the things I'm going to have set up is on the page for this book is I'm going to have some audio shavasanas. So somebody could just, put it on, click it on and get an experience of what it's like to be taken through a lead shavasana.
And I don't mean to be self-promoting, but I have written two books on pranayama.
And we'll mention again, pranayama is the breathing practice, and
It's
right?
a more structured breathing practice.
Structured breathing practice,
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, in the book, we're keeping it very basic, like, about what good breathing is, as well as some simple practices that are accessible for most people.
Like anybody can do this. This is not very complicated at all.
Yes. And just such an important tool to add to whatever it is you're doing, whatever practices people have, to try to benefit themselves.
Well, the thing about that is it's not just a practice, it's something you do all day long. Eventually, you become aware of your breathing, and it's a really good way to stay present during the day because your breath.
Conscious awareness of our breath brings us right into this moment right now as I'm taking the breath. That's really perfect. And Leslie, I love the idea of like an audio guide through Shavasana because people can experience it for themselves at home that way. And it'll be far different to be led through it than if they were at home trying to lie down on a yoga mat
Well,
and
my editor's like, "Oh my God, you have all these instructions. Do you really expect them to be reading it?" And I was like, "No." I said, "There's going to be an audio on the website." And you don't you will get more out of a Shavasana if you've done yoga before it, but it's not necessary. You can get something out of it in a practice of itself. So let's say somebody's like, "I'm never going to do yoga. I love to run. That's what I do. That's all I have time for." Okay, go for your run and then come on and do the Shavasana. They would get something really good out of it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. Well, just for myself, over the last couple of years, I've been doing a lot of deep grief work on old grief that's really been stored in my body that I didn't realize it until I developed some physical health issues that, wow, there's grief here that I never tended to before. And that's where I found yoga practices and the stillness of Shavasana really helpful because doing the physical practices kind of opens up the body for me where some of that old pain has been stored. And then the Shavasana afterwards is where I somehow I'm able to integrate it and kind of embrace it, I guess, as part
Yeah,
of
and that
me.
goes back to what I was saying is that the yoga is an energy management system, and if you get better at being aware of your subtle energy body, like you're describing, like you may not, a lot of people may not notice, oh, when I'm breathing, around my gallbladder, there's no movement, as an example, right? But someone who's been more practiced, they might be like, wow, I'm really noticing that I have this, regular pain around my gallbladder, and my breath doesn't really move around there. And can I invite my breath to be in that area? Such an effective practice.
Yeah, and then the stillness aspect at the end, that's critical. It's important to not miss that.
Yeah, it's the physical stillness, and then, it's layers, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm really excited about this book that you've written, and I think we should direct people to either the website betweenbreathanddeath.com or to lesliehowardyoga.com. But you
Yes.
also have the Nest Yoga Studio, and is that a separate one? If someone in your area
That's
wants to.
Nest Dash Yoga. Nest Dash Yoga. But there's links on my site to that. And if you're interested in purchasing the book, it'll be up on all the, on the sellers. You can buy it through Amazon, you can buy it through our site.
We have
Lots
a
of options.
great faculty there in Nest Yoga.
Yes.
A lot
Yeah.
of good teachers.
Yes. So people who live in your area or are visiting there might want to take advantage of that. And
And the classes, all the classes are streamed. So people can drop in from
oh,
I'm
nice.
yeah,
Oh,
Richard
that's
and I both have a contingent from London that
yeah.
drop into our classes.
Oh, that's nice. I'll have maybe I can join you someday then. That would be real fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, during COVID, we got an international crowd going.
Yeah, that's one thing. One of the blessings that came out of the tragedy of COVID was we all got a lot more comfortable doing things online.
Yes, that's very true. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, just one more thing. Like, what inspired you to write the book in the first place? What led up to the book?
The book was my idea, because my, as I described earlier, my teacher, Ramana Patel, I'd had so many really profound experiences in Shavasana that really made me pause, like kind of an experience of being connected to everything and that Leslie didn't exist. And I talked to him about it, and he's like, oh. Oh, what a gift you got. He was like, oh yeah, like that happens all the time. But I thought like, wow, like I had that experience, why can't other people have that experience? So that was what started the idea. Let me tell you, the idea was like, I think started in 2007, and it's been on and off, on and off, on and off. And I've been waiting for Richard to be available because he's such a gifted yogi and writer. And I would always say, he'd say, how's that Shavasana book going? And I'd say, well, I'm waiting for you to help me write it. And he'd say, yeah, I'm writing this other book. And I finally, one day I said it, and he said, yeah, okay. And I was like, what?
One best breath I've ever taken in my life was in the class with Ramanand.
Yeah,
My jaw fell open when I did that. I was so surprised. I never
such
knew
an
what it would be.
inspiring teacher, and it makes you
Really.
want to give that to your students, and it wants it
Absolutely.
makes us we Richard and I are both we teach teachers, we teach in the teacher training program, and so I want to also like telegraph that to our teacher trainees, like this is an important pose, don't short shrift it.
Well, in my experience, when you're creating something that's for the benefit of others, sometimes it's a very slow process. It takes a while because
Well,
you.
I've lived up to that.
Because the timing has to be right and the world has to be ready for it. So it seems like this is perfect. Like you're offering a message that is really needed right now and that will benefit a lot of people.
It felt right when, I wasn't into this death stuff like until the last few years, and Richard and I were already working on the book, and I just felt this is such. I just one, I don't know, it was like the middle of the night or morning. I was just like, oh my God, it just makes so much sense to include this in the book. And I asked Richard what he thought, and I thought he was going to say, no way, but he thought it
I'll
was
say
a
you
good
think easy to that.
idea.
Like, this is how it all comes together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's really perfect for the audience that I have, and I'm so excited to share another tool because it's one I'm familiar with that I also happen to love as part of my own life. So I was so excited when you introduced the book to me, and now I get to share it with all of my audience and hope people will go out and get the book, Shavasana Between Breath and Death, a how-to for the final pose. And I just love that idea. Like we can practice every day, and be in that space where we're just contemplating, one day.
And again, not to be morbid, but to be more appreciative of our lives while we're
Ex
here.
exactly. That one day th this life won't be here, this as it is, this physical body, but I can make the most of every single moment and day that I have. Is there any other message you would want to close with, or anything else you'd like to say?
You're a very good interviewer.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
Really
that's very
good.
nice of you. Okay.
No, I think we've covered it all. Yeah, don't think of death as a taboo subject. You know, you can have some amazing conversations with that as a launching point.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I wish you great success with the book. I'm excited that it's coming out into the world. And maybe I'll be seeing you maybe on a streaming yoga class one
Okay, that would be lovely. Thanks,
day.
Karen.
Maybe you won't know I'm there, but I will be. All right. Thank you both.
Thank you very much. It was very pleasant.
Thanks. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Leslie and Richard. I was very excited about the idea, as I said before, of bringing a death cafe into the yoga studio. I think it's so valuable when we can bring conversations about death and dying and the end of life into all areas of our life and encourage people to take time and sit down and begin to talk about their questions, their fears, the mysteries of life and death, and to be able to share those together. So I was really excited to hear that they're doing this, and I actually hope it will inspire listeners out there to think about what spaces do you hold regularly with other people where you might be able to introduce a death cafe, even if it's only once a quarter, an occasional gathering where you invite people to come and talk about death. Because I think, you know, Leslie and Richard had no assurance that this would be welcome or successful when they started offering it. They didn't know if anyone would show up, but they've had a really good response to it. And I think that's what we have to gather the courage in order to offer these death discussions in various places and see what happens. We really have nothing to lose. Okay, maybe you plan something and no one comes. It's information. You've learned something. And it could be a death cafe, it could be an evening of death over drafts or death over dessert, death over coffee, or maybe you play a game like the death deck and invite people to come just for conversation. And even with the death deck, it could be an evening of light-hearted approach and talk about end-of-life issues. It doesn't have to necessarily be all somber and serious, but I really want to encourage everyone to use your creativity, get inspired, and think about where in your life, maybe it's even in your apartment building or your condo complex, maybe it's in your workplace, you could introduce conversations about death and dying and just step out and take a risk and find out whether or not people are interested. You will never know if you don't try it. So get inspired by this story from Leslie and Richard and see what you might be able to do in your own community. And also, particularly if you're interested in yoga, take a look at their book, Shavasana, Between Breath and Death, a how-to for the final pose. And you can go to Leslie's website, lesliehowardyoga.com, and find out more about the book there, or the website betweenbreathanddeath.com. So thank you once again for joining me here today. If you enjoy content like this, be sure and tell other people about it. Spread the word about this podcast and encourage them to listen, or maybe just share a single episode that you think might be helpful to them. Also, be sure to subscribe and leave a rating and review for the podcast wherever you happen to listen. You can check out the YouTube channel if you like watching videos. You'll be able to see my guests on the videos as we talk to each other, and those videos largely go unedited, so they contain a lot of our bloopers and mistakes, particularly mine. So they're very transparent and authentic, and you'll see all of that if you love to watch videos. You might enjoy that. It's also under the name End of Life University on YouTube. And finally, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support, and there you'll find three different ways you can make a financial contribution to help keep the podcast and the YouTube channel on the air. And I will be forever grateful if you choose to do that. the smallest amount of money, even a couple of dollars a month, can make a big difference to me. And once again, thank you to everyone who's been doing that for several years now and helping out. I really appreciate it. I will be back in 2 weeks with another interview for you. And until then, remember that we're here for love. That's really the whole reason for this existence. But along with love comes grief. Grief is the other side of love. And so we carry them both together. So learn to face your fear. Be ready for whatever life brings you next. And don't forget to just love every moment that you get a chance to be here on this beautiful planet. Bye-bye.